This episode of the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast is brought to you by Spectacle Eyewear. Now, if you've been watching any episodes of this podcast on our YouTube channel, you might have noticed I've been wearing some pretty cool specs lately. Well, you know where I get them? Spectacle Eyewear, 505 Tremont Street, Boston, Massachusetts. Their phone number is 617-542-9600. Head down to Spectacle. Go visit our friend Paul. You'll get yourself some cool specs. Rock and roll hoochie coo. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. We have a cool interview today with Boston Punkers Hammered Saint. In fact, we started you off with their song Steal the Show from their 3-song 7-inch single, which was released this past December and is available at bandcamp.com. In a few minutes, you will hear the fun conversation I had with energetic singer Emily Duran and bassist Andy Excuse from Hammered Saint, who will hopefully have a full-length album out maybe by the end of 2024. Check this out, and we'll be right back. Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums and their 2 locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool. That's right, Joe's Albums, gotta love them. Did anyone else watch the Grammys this year? I haven't been watching them live every year, but this year seemed interesting with Billie Eilish, Olivia Rodrigo, and Miley Cyrus all performing, and they all ended up winning Grammys, by the way. It was pretty cool that Boy Genius, a band that we've been talking about for a while, scored 3 Grammys. This happened days after they announced they were taking a break, which they had to explain to everyone all week. I'm pretty sure they're all under contract with solo deals, and that's probably the real reason they are taking a hiatus. It's not like they're breaking up or anything, so take a chill pill, people. They'll be back. 80-year-old Joni Mitchell also performed, which was a great moment as well. And can you believe the Beatles actually won a Grammy? They did. The speeches are always the most fun for me when I watch award shows. And of course, the host, Trevor Noah, was great. And I thought that speech that Miley gave when she won was fantastic. Hard to believe this is her first Grammy. You would think she'd would have a bunch of Grammys by now. Miley also gave a stellar performance after winning the award. There was a very little presence for rock on the show. That was the big disappointment. Paramore won the Grammy for Best Rock Album, but I guess the category is not popular enough for prime time anymore, because that didn't even happen during prime time. They have a special ceremony ahead of the actual event, and they give out a bunch of awards there, and I guess that's when they awarded Paramore. These are different times, folks. It's all about pop, rap, and country in the mainstream. That's not going to stop us, though, because we're here to keep the rock and roll alive. The Dogmatics. I love rock and roll. Yes, we do. Got some exciting news for you. Jerry and James from the band, as well as the director of the Dogmatics dogumentary, Rudy Childs, are all on episode 293 of the podcast, which debuts Monday, February 12th. We had a great time talking. They've got another screening coming up in March, and we talk all about that. So stay tuned for that. It's coming out Monday. Okay, Hammered Saint. Emily Duran made quite a name for herself in the Boston music scene with the band The Gala. When they split up, there was a lot of anticipation about what she would do next. And man, she came out of the box hard. We didn't expect anything less. With a new band, Hammered Saint, along with Andy Excuse and drummer Mark Emmett. And once they solidified their guitar player, Kurt Florzak, then the thing started really smoking and they were on their way. All right, Emily and Andy tell us the whole story. I'm going to play that for you right now. So here it is. Check it out. Welcome to those of you watching on YouTube. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear this entire show with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Please welcome to the show Emily and Andy from Hammered Saint. It's never too early for punk rock. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, guys. That's why I said that, you know, because I don't do a lot of interviews this early because most musicians don't like to get up. Me, I get up. I'll do 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't care.
We did it for you, Steve.
Did you seriously just do this for me, Andy?
Of course. Of course.
Well, thank you. You know, before we get into Hammered Saint and some of the other bands and stuff you guys done, I'm just curious, And either one of you can go first. Like, where you're from, where you grew up, when you know, when you started listening to music.
Emily, go ahead.
Me? Oh, I grew up in upstate New York, like Adirondack Foothills, Greater Albany area. I moved to Boston in 2009. I actually moved out here like with my band at the time to make music. So that's where I'm from. What was the other question? What did I?
Well, before we get to Boston, when you were young, when did you start listening to music at an early age? I mean, when did you get into music and when did it switch over to punk rock?
Okay, so my parents listened to a lot of music growing up. I would say like my first musical memory was my dad listening to records of Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. I also remember Ziggy Marley, and they went to a lot of the folk festivals. It would be this whole weekend. My parents would bring my brother and I, and we'd just go run around like barefoot, in the 80s when they didn't watch your kids. And so there's a lot of folk music growing up. And then started listening to like rock and roll in my teens, and then I made a very clear switch to punk in not until my 20s, and or in like in my college I was like super into goth, and then which was kind of an offshoot of punk, so I almost kind of went backwards. And then my friends, and then what turned into my boyfriend in like mid 2000s were in this punk band. They were like punk rockabilly glam band, and I started singing for them. And then we did a cross country tour, and just being in the car with these, I was the oldest person. Like our youngest were 18, and they turned 18, and as soon as they turned 18, we left to go tour the country, and listening to all like everything from The Clash to like The Briefs, who were in Seattle at the time. And that was like a history from like my boyfriend and these 18-year-olds who were younger than me. We just listened to everything, and like that was it. I was a changed woman. Like I was like, punk or die at that point.
Right on. Let me go back for a second. Where did you go to college?
I went to college at a SUNY school in New York, upstate, SUNY Oneonta.
Yeah, there's a lot of those
There
Sunnies.
are a lot. There were
Now,
a lot.
were you close to Albany?
Yeah, it was about like an hour drive northwest.
Okay. What was the band that you I can't remember if you said you got into a band or you joined your boyfriend's band or what
Yeah,
was.
yeah. I joined my boyfriend's band. We were called the Designer Drugs. So
Oh.
we played a good amount of shows in Boston back in like 20, like 2007, 8, 9, 10.
I remember the name, yeah.
Where did you guys play when you were in Boston?
Played a lot the Midway. We played Middle East, Jacques Underground. We
Oh,
did a couple
yeah.
shows there.
I love that.
I don't think we played our last show ever at Precinct in Somerville,
Oh, wow.
which was then Brass Union and is now Vera's. So
Was that like a total, was that a full-on punk band?
yeah, well, we started with an upright bass. And then
Oh.
we got our bass player, Justin Pirelli, who was in the Gala. He didn't play upright. So we kind of moved like a little bit more punk after that, but it was very much just like punk glam, just old school punk, with a little bit of D David Bowie, a little bit of rockabilly.
Cool. Before I pick up from there. Andy, are you from the Boston area or are you from out of state also?
I'm originally from Worcester. I was born in Worcester.
Really? Oh,
Yeah.
we might have talked about this because
It's possible. Yeah.
we did hang out for a little while around
Yeah.
2009, Black Mozettes.
Yeah.
I was doing helping Mickey Bliss with a little booking and I really liked you guys a lot.
Thanks very much. Yeah.
So you grew up in Worcester, huh? I grew up right outside of Worcester myself.
I didn't grow up there. My whole extended family, my grandparents all came over. They all settled in Worcester. I was born, my parents were born there. I was born there. But when I was a little child, my parents moved us to that woodsy northeast corner of Connecticut. You know, when you're driving down to New York and you start to get into Connecticut, it's all woods and hills as far as you can see. That's where I grew up all my school age years. So it was just, Hicksville, one traffic light,
What town was that?
Coventry.
I don't even know
It
that
has an exit off 84. If you're paying
Oh.
attention, you might spot it. But other than that, there's no reason to ever go or know about it.
So is that in Connecticut or Mass?
It's in Connecticut. That's in the northeast corner there. It's called the Quiet Corner, and it's called that by the rest of Connecticut. So you know how quiet it must be. And all my school age years were there, and it was Deadsville. And it's really, God, it's quite a few, or it was in the 70s and 80s when I was growing up, quite a few years behind the curve.
Right.
And reading about punk rock in the newspaper, in the Hartford Courant, that's where you get the occasional glimpses of the Ramones or the Pistols or the Dead Kennedys. But it was always in the context of, look at this terrible thing that's happening in London and New York. When we're right next door to Storrs, Connecticut, where the University of Connecticut is. They had one of the first and still one of the biggest and most powerful college radio stations,
WHUS. It's a
WHUS.
good one.
And oh man, it's wonderful. It's still well, I haven't listened in a while, but whenever I was back in Connecticut, that's what I try and tune into. They played a lot of punk, and in the early and mid 80s, when I first started trying it out, there's a lot of hardcore, which for a kid who wasn't really exposed to it and was just trying to find out, that's a deep end to dive in. And it was a bit terrifying, it took me a little while to get into the shallower end, because I grew up hearing my parents, Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, Little Richard, all the 45s, rock and roll, 50s R&B. And that is the basis of all my musical taste and playing and everything. But then when I started to get to be 15, 16 years old and reading more and more about punk rock, and so this would be mid 80s, 86, 80, 87, turned 16 years old in 87, and started hearing finally, the first Ramones record, Never Mind the Bollocks, first Suicidal record, Dead Kennedys, In God We Trust Incorporated. And man, when I heard those first Ramones and Pistols records, that was fucking it. I said, I have to be involved, that this is my life. And it has been ever since.
Did you had you pick up the bass at that point in time, or were you playing anything?
When I heard the Ramones and the Pistols, I had played instruments from like when I was a little kid, and when I was 11 or 12, started playing sax in the school band. So I have formal training, and all those old rock and roll and R&B records have a sax. So I was like, yeah, rock and roll. Of course, outmoded, this is already 30 years out of date by the time I was picking up on it, but I got to be first chair in the school band and everything. And so then yeah, I don't know, it was a really small town and everything, but I was the anyhow, so that was fun and I liked it. But then when I heard punk rock, I said, yeah, there's I can't I don't see too much room for sax in here. So
Right.
guitar just seemed difficult and intimidating. And of course, I already knew a bunch of metal kids who are like, I'm going to play guitar. And it's just an infernal racket at that age. And like when you don't know how to play it and you're trying to learn how to play Van Halen. So I was like, I'm going to play bass. So I
Right.
said, I know how music works. I know how rock and roll works. I can hear it. I can hear the changes. I know how it's supposed to go. And I can hear that bass guitar, especially Dee Dee Ramone's bass.
I think we lost Emily, but
I
hopefully
think we
she'll
did.
come
She'll
back.
be back. She'll be back.
What did like she said she moved to Boston, I think around 2007 or 8. Did you mo move there before that, or were you up there be
About 10 years earlier, mid late 90s, I forget exactly the year. Ah, here she is. Hey, Emily.
There
Took me a
she
little while. I was pissing in the wind with a punk band that used to play UConn, used to play Eastern Connecticut State University, used to play the LNG down in New London. But Eastern Connecticut, just minuscule scene with barely any gigs, there were a surprising amount of bands in Manchester, Connecticut. But the other two guys were just, in it for fun and, getting messed up and chasing pussy. And I really wanted to, make a life of it and be a musician. It took me way too long to figure out you got to get out of this podunk little town. And a bunch of my friends came up to Boston and I eventually followed along.
Yeah, Connecticut's kind of a dead city. I mean,
Oh.
you mentioned the L&G Club. I remember going down there a few times years ago, and then the Grotto and New Haven had a couple of. But Hartford, it's probably the least cultural place I've ever seen in my life, which is
Hartford,
crazy.
to be between Boston and New York and to have absolutely nothing for independent music, you'd hear rumors of clubs that had existed previously for brief amounts of time, but there never was any existing scene in all the time I was in Connecticut,
The
in Hartford.
Webster Hall, I think, was in Hartford. I remember going there to see some bands, but other than that, there was really nothing. So you were there like 10 years before Emily got there. Did you play in a lot of bands in Boston? I know the Black Mozzets, which I saw many times. Great band. They were
Thank
more
you.
like a soul R&B kind of
Yes.
punk leaning. There was
Yes.
a little maybe punkiness, but it was very R&B-ish, but really good. Rona was a good singer. It was a good band.
Thank you so much. That was a special thing. It was definitely R&B soul, and it was the punk influence of me and Steven, the guitar player, who also just was a big, big pop music fan. So it was disparate influences, and I think we did a good job. A lot of those people have never been in bands, and it was a challenge. Plus, it expanded to a sextet when we added Bob Gamp on lead guitar. So it was tough. We never found an audience, but yeah, it was a good band. We came out with one good recording that
You
we
found
broke
me.
up
I
as
was in the
listeners. There we
audience. I
go.
liked you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that. Oh,
I know I saw you guys on many shows down there at the.
and you got us the opener for Detroit Cobras at TT's.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yep. Wow, I forgot about that. That was a
But
good one.
when I first got to town, I was in a bunch of different bands. One that kind of went somewhere without me. We started a band. We called it the Elgins. Just
Oh,
either
yeah.
kind of a combination of willful ignorance. Let's call it willful ignorance of the existing Detroit 60s band, the Elgins. And that was pretty good. We were starting to do real well at the Abbey. But I was not in good health at the time, and they decided they'd be better off without me. And they went on to, they replaced me, and they changed to the Tampoffs, who did really well.
Yeah, I remember
So,
the Tamp-Offs.
yeah,
Definitely. Yeah, you
and I
mentioned
was in other bands, but I had to take time mainly to get better.
Detroit, and I think you guys have a lot of Detroit influences. Wayne Kramer, man, passed away a couple days ago.
What a shame. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a sad one. Emily, I when I was living in I moved that way. I lived in seven states. I mostly was in California, but I moved back and forth, and I was in Boston for a couple of years when I met Andy, but I moved away after that. And Alvin Long, who runs Curve of the Earth Records, New Alliance Studios, he started sending me videos of this band, The Gala. And I'm like, what the f-? He sent me this one video, and you are crawling on a bar, and I don't know where it was. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, this is like the female Iggy, Steve, Alvin says. And I'm like, wow. So I really got into you guys. And I remember I wanted to get you guys on my podcast when I started it. And then you split up. And that was the end of that. So I am aware of that band, and I listened to a lot of your music. It was a really good band. Talk about that a little bit, that experience for you.
You're muted, Emily.
Whoops, we can't hear you.
You're on mute, crazy
Oh,
balls.
thank you. Thank you. I was saying thank you for
If you want to talk about it, I don't know. Sometimes people don't want to talk about their old
No,
band.
I'll talk about it. I love the story of how I got into that band. When like my previous band, I mentioned the Designer Drugs broke up. Like that was also relationship breakups. That was a real bad time. And I kind of fell out with some people because just, like Andy said, I was having a hard time. I need to take some time away. And I kind of just stopped talking to everybody for a couple of years. And then just one day out of the blue, I get, a phone call from, one of, my buddies I'd met in the scene. He's like, "Oh, we're doing a band. You want to come try out?" And I thought, like, I had always just like hoped, like, or always, for a while been like wanting to get back into the scene. And I just got this phone call and they're like, "Oh, it's all my friends who I haven't spoken to in years." And like the first time I went down to like try out, and they had already tried out something like five other singers, and they're like, "All right, if Emily doesn't work out, then we're just not going to do it." And so I went and I was so super nervous. And then yeah, it was just the one rehearsal and like that was it. We were a thing. It was instantly like everybody worked. It felt like it was something special like pretty quickly. I put a lot of that on Rebecca Frank. She didn't start out with a Farfisa, but when that got added in, it
Yeah.
felt like, to me, it will always be like she is. I mean, but just everybody, like our guitar player Chris Keneally, like he had a vision and he made everything happen. And he was a great songwriter and like he pushed me so hard to be like a better songwriter. And sometimes I hated him for it, but that whole experience, I feel like just it made me like such a better songwriter. It was really intense though, like. Everybody was really like, I mean, and that's like what we're about, that's why we do this. But yeah, it could feel like really intense sometimes, which is probably why the shows were really good. But 2020 happened and it just
Yeah.
we kind of just like stopped talking. It was sad, but it kind of, like any relationship, they come and they go and it's sort of up to you to decide what purpose, or like what it means for you in your life. And I'm very much like so grateful that it happened, rather than like upset that it ended. And and now I'm here now.
Yeah, it
So
was kind of for some of us, me anyways, a kind of mysterious. I Sleazegrinder also, who's a Ken, is an old friend of mine. I know he was a big supporter of the Galler as well. Now, here's a good segue. Did you guys live in the Boston area, and were you part of that mass exodus to Salem? Because I associate you guys are not Salem,
No,
Salem.
I mean, at the time, I started off, I lived in Dorchester, and then I relocated to Somerville, where I still am now.
Jealous.
Oh, I love it here, but oh, it's a struggle to be here. I could go on about that for hours, as but our bass player Justin, who I mentioned, he was in Hyde Park, and and then Chris and Rebecca were in southern New Hampshire area, and then we went through a couple drummers, and they were from all like the area, like Melrose, Medford, Bill Recca. So I mean, I would say pretty close. We call ourselves a Boston band. I think we were a Boston band.
I think Richard Marr is the one that thinks that all the punks moved to Salem.
That makes sense.
He's largely right. I mean, so many of them did. But then again, look who's talking about that. We're all well into our middle age at this point. So it's like, I think a lot of the middle-aged punks got priced out, got, fed up, moved to Salem. There's still a lot of kids.
I used to live in Somerville. I can't afford Somerville anymore. It's ridiculous, man.
It is. It is. I'm involved in a couple, volunteer organizations here who are like really trying to push back on that, and try to keep music, not just housing, but music rehearsal and art space affordable. And that's a whole other podcast. That's like a whole
Yeah.
like part-time job, but trying, like, I trying to keep this here, like hold on to it as much as
Yeah, I
possible.
know Amy Bennett and Nick Z and all of them. Is that
Yeah.
the organization you're talking about?
That's one of them.
Yeah, I
That's
know those guys are really working hard to try and keep the practice spaces and art spaces, and which I'm all in favor of. I was actually doing this podcast in the New Alliance building in Somerville, and then Mike Nash shut the studio down. So now I'm a remoter. But you know, and I live close to Worcester, actually, so I'm not even in Boston, but I love Somerville. So, but you guys still, even your previous band, Emily, you guys kind of played a lot in Salem. I always seem to associate the your even Hammered Saint. I don't know why I have an association with Salem. Is that because you guys
We can
played
get
there a
into that.
lot?
We can get into that if you like. The band Hammered Saint formed as the house band for the Heavy Leather Horror Show, which when Ken
Sleaze.
Sleazegrinder and his wife Stacy, the producer and host of the Heavy Leather Universe, they got priced out of Somerville. They moved to Salem. During the last, Emily was involved considerably earlier than I was in the Heavy Leather Topless Dance Party, which used to shoot right out of Somerville Community Access Television. But I was aboard that show for its last 8 months. At that point, Sleazegrinder Ken and Stacy were already commuting there from Salem to do the show on Wednesday nights. They had already, it had gotten too much for them. They said, okay, we're starting Heavy Leather Horror Show out of Salem Access Television. We're going to end Topless Dance Party. Fortunately, pandemic shut it down before they, so they let the pandemic be the bad guy. And they were like, all right, oh, too bad, before they had to tell everyone, hey, tell you what, we're not doing this anymore,
Was
because a
that in
lot of people.
Union Square they used to record? Is that where Salem?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, New Alliance is right up the street from there. That
There sure
neighborhood is,
was.
my God, you go there now if you haven't been there in years, it's unrecognizable, that
Yeah.
neighborhood. All the new buildings, it's crazy. Now, let's talk about how Hammered Saint formed. When it's only been a few years, right?
It's only
22?
been 2 years.
Yeah.
We and I'll just go over this briefly because I managed to do a good job of alienating everyone who's been in the band for the past year, making it what it is now. Just as I mentioned, Heavy Leather moved to Salem. It was the Heavy Leather Horror Show. They wanted a house band, just like Black Leather Lagoon. Emily was involved with that house band on Topless Dance Party. I would fill in towards the end of that show. We had a ball with it, but when they're out in Salem, they needed a new house band after the pandemic. So I was aboard. I said, I'll form a band. I asked most of the old Gala people. I thought of asking Emily, and I was like, she'd never join. I'd never get Emily. I must be mad. I couldn't ask her. So I got Sam Emmerall, who was the singer of Black Leather Lagoon, Johnny Barash, who was the drummer of Black Leather Lagoon. He's been in a
Johnny
ton of local bands.
Strangeman?
That's the man. That's the
Johnny,
man.
I love
Yeah.
Johnny.
Oh, he's like a brother. And Jake Treese, who lives downtown Salem, he's been in a ton of punk and hardcore bands out there. Great kid, terrific player. And that was the original lineup. Heavy Leather Horror Show only, unfortunately, shot 5 episodes. And it was just, they were shooting that like once a month. That turned out to be harder than doing a shoot once a week, to get everything together,
I
everything
watched a
set up.
few of those. I
Yeah.
watched some of those on the
They're all on
online.
YouTube,
Yeah,
and
good
they're a
stuff.
blast. But
Yeah.
it was a motherfucker to get together. So we, we did a couple heavy leather events. We did a show for my birthday. All during this, the lineup was changing. People had health issues. People had life issues. Some people said, "Yeah, we, you know, this is cool for heavy leather events and special occasions. We don't want this to be a full-time thing." Every time someone had to go, I was able to, through connections of connections, find someone to step in who improved the band, not to denigrate my terrific friends and excellent musicians who were the original lineup. But by a year ago, by January of last year, Kurt joined. Man, the first time Emily, when we used to see the gala, it was just a fucking tornado, and it was intimidating to see you. It was like seeing Iggy. And when Sam had to leave, and Johnny was gone already, and he said, "You should ask Emily." I was like, "Oh, I couldn't do that." So we did, and we were lucky enough. It happened to be the right moment. Emily came aboard. The first time she came to Charlestown rehearsal studio to rehearse with us, she's fucking killing it the first few takes, and then I'm like, man, it's going really well. She turns to me, she's like, "I'm gonna throw up." And I was like, "You're nervous, Jesus." So
was
anyway,
was it you, Curtin, and Mark at that point, or was this before
Kurt
Curt
was the
that?
last to join.
Yeah.
I mentioned the original lineup. Johnny had to go. Mark Ennett joined. I was playing with him in another band at the time, and he joined up. He's up for anything.
That guy plays
Sam,
drums 7 days a week.
yeah, he's your typical drummer. He's in six bands. Yeah, Sam was on. She was getting married. Her job was changing, and she was starting to have some issues with her back, which we all know can be a motherfucker. So she's like, "Yeah, I can't really do this as a regular thing." That's when we were lucky enough to get Emily. Just the moment was right for everyone. And then Jake played a last couple shows with us, and he's like, he's a hardcore guy. He has his own bands, and he's like, this is fun. I don't want to do it as like my regular gig. I had sort of been in touch with Kurt. He made the move out of the high end. And the time was right for everybody involved. I happened to ask. He was kind of interested. He checked it out. He said, "Okay, yeah, I'll commit to these couple of shows." See, we played that first performance January in at the Midway. The place was full. He got off stage. He could not buy a drink. He came over. He said, "Andy, I'm in." So the
Yeah,
rest is history.
Kurt was on the show actually, because I met him through Greg Allen a few years ago. Really, really good guitar player. I mean, you
We
guys
were
are.
on that Midway show because Greg Allen saw Emily's first show at Jungle. Before I could get off stage, Greg grabbed me. She's like fucking Niagara. Will you guys play with us at Midway in January?
Greg loves Emily. I've talked to him about Emily before.
Aww.
Everyone loves you, Emily. You're like very, people are very endearing to your relentless
Ha
style. I know I am. So you get the whole lineup together. And correct me if I'm out of order here, but I think the first thing you did was steal the show. You recorded that with Richard, right? Richard Marr?
Emily brought Steal the Show, and why don't you take it, Emily?
Oh, so we needed what did we wanted some originals really quickly, but we had just gotten this lineup together. So I mentioned, Justin Pirelli from the gala and from Designer Drugs. He and I had written a couple songs in was it 2021, 22. One was called Dirty Work and the other one was called Steal the Show. And actually that was one of the last songs that the gala had written, but Justin had written that song. It had a very specific feel. I feel like that was his, and we played it like twice. So I said, let's use it. Let's use it. It's a great song. Nobody's
It's
heard it.
ours now.
It's ours now. And it sounds different, but so we recorded, and then yeah, Dirty Work was something that the two of us wrote in, and nobody, like, no, we'd never played it. We'd never recorded it, just in rehearsal. So I asked him, I'm like, "Hey, can we use these songs?" And he said, "Yeah, go take them." He very graciously, was happy.
So Dirty Work and Steal the Show, he co-wrote both of those.
Yeah, that was Justin and I. Yeah.
Were they gala songs before they were Hammered Saint,
One
or
was one was Steal the Show was. And Dirty Work was brand new to us, but it was only like we played it twice. I think we played Steal the Show twice in 2020. So I said, let's use it.
now, how did you decide to record with Richard Marr? First I have to tell you that Richard's a very good friend of mine. We've worked on a lot of records together over the years. It's been a few years since we did that, but He did some of the best, like the Charms Pussycat record to me was
Oh
one
my
of the
God,
best records I ever
correct.
worked on, and he recorded it. We got, it was mixed by the bigger guys in New York and LA, but Richard recorded the basics. That was over at the Greenhouse in Allston.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with that place, but that was where the original Galaxy Park was. So how did you guys end up with Richard?
Black Mozzets recorded our record at the Greenhouse. I was sort of out of it while he was in Watertown, but by the time Richard moved to Salem, I had my band, The Fightin' Fish, together. I spent a few years pissing in the wind with that band, which I couldn't get anywhere. But we recorded several records with Richard. They're out, you can get them. Why bother? Because once this lineup of the current lineup said, well, okay, this is our gig, this is our main thing, we're doing original songs, we had so much material. It was just flowing out every time. We'd have like existing songs, and every time we got together to play, more stuff would begin to develop. So I said, let's not waste any time. Let's go right away. I know this guy. He's great. I've been really pleased with all the records he's recorded for me. One year ago, today, we were in Salem in at Galaxy Park on that day when it was like -5 degrees. And Emily's wearing pants and a bra, and we're fucking recording the first Hammered Saint single, which Steve was kind enough to hold up. You go to our band camp, there we go. There's still a few copies left.
I loved that place in Salem. I
Me too.
slept in that guest room up there a few times, actually. And Richard Marr, I've known all the different fate. You know how I met Richard? In 2000, I managed his band Flexi. I don't know if you
Okay.
ever remember Flexi. It was Ellie V, who ended up in the Charms, Rosie Huntress, Chris Willett, who plays drums in LA for a bunch of people. He's done really well for himself. And Richard was the guitar player. And he had moved down from, he's also from upstate New York. I'm sure you probably talked to him
He's
about that,
mentioned,
Emily.
yeah.
Yeah. He's from up, I don't know where, but he's from up there. He has these photos of him playing in these glam bands when he was young. It doesn't even look like the same guy. But he seems like a perfect guy for you guys at that time. I mean, he's a good starting point for sure for punk.
Absolutely. Made everyone really comfortable, and he really knows his stuff. So does Kurt. So when the two of them got together, they were able to create something very special, which you'll hear on that record when you go to our Bandcamp page and buy it.
I've listened to it many times and I like it a lot. You have a cover on here
Thank
too.
you. Yes.
Who's the cover? What's the cover? Nothing Means Nothing. I can't remember. Randy Stadola. What band was that?
The Alley Cats.
Alley Cats, LA band. Okay, sorry. I knew that. It slipped my mind for a second. Yeah, this is a really good record. So you follow that up with, let's see, Descent. Okay, that came out in April as a digital single, and then you released it the 7-inch later on. December 2023, you released the Shaggy Lounge Sessions Volume 1, which is four covers, some of my favorite songs.
Thank you.
I love that you covered the Gun Club. And there's a video, by the way, for you
That's
people
Emily.
listening. There's a video out there on YouTube of these guys doing Sex Beat Live. It's fucking fantastic. I highly recommend you check it out. And The Witch also, the Sonics, you pick some really good, and Penelope, you did a Penelope Houston song too, Thin White
Yes,
Line.
indeed. Thin White Line.
What were you doing that just because you were still working out your originals and you just decided you wanted to put a covers record out? Is that what happened with that?
Well, as I mentioned, we started as the house band for a public access TV show that was like a punk rock spooky theme, and we were to accompany the strippers as they did their act. Hammered Saint was a cover band. So our first year, there were no originals. It was cover songs, and it was, since we're all old obscure weirdos, we picked old obscure punk rock songs to do.
Good ones.
And thank you. And there's so many that don't get their due. So we did our best to get some great ones that are underheard. as different people started joining and pitching their influences. For instance, Sex Beat, that was Emily. And if you'd like to take it from there, Emily, that'd be a good point.
Yes, obsessed. I could be in a gun club cover band. We're doing the spooky songs because, a spooky show. And then, it was Jake who said, well, why don't we just pick, whatever. We all like pitched a ton of songs. I would say I pitched the gun club, but Jake, was the one who kind of went and from all of the songs that got pitched, he was the one that kind of pick them out. It's like, okay, we're gonna do this one, this was in this one. I feel like he Jake was the one that chose all of those songs, so we're gonna give and then we got rid of a couple, and then since Kurt came on, we've like brought in like a couple different ones, but most recently Amoeba by the Adolescents. It's so confusing with the boys because we do a boys cover song too. I'm like, which one is
Sick on you.
which?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Gangrene, Another Wasted Night.
You
So
guys do Another Wasted Night? Oh, I love that.
yeah.
Great. Yeah, I'm a big Chris is a good friend of mine. I love Gangrene.
Oh, tell him, hey, I'm a fan from way back.
Yeah, a lot of us are.
Yeah.
It's funny, Emily, but I didn't think of this now, but when I worked at Enigma Records in the early 80s, we put out some Tex and the Horseheads records. And I don't know, do you know who Texacollar Jones is?
No.
You should. She
Okay.
was Jeffrey Lee Pierce's girlfriend for a while from the Gun Club. And I remember and she, re oh my God, the comparisons between you two, and I can't believe that just kind of hit me. The first time I met her, she came in the Enigma office to meet everyone and she brought a blanket with her. And imagine someone walking into an office and putting a blanket on the floor and just laying on the blanket. And it's like 23-year-old me was like, what?
Love it.
But yeah, I never got this. I didn't get to see the Gun Club, but they're a great band. They were a great band. So let's see. So you put that out, and then the single came out, and now you've got a new song, "You're Killing Me," which I heard the digitally. It's fantastic. What was the recording process for that? Because you did it differently this time.
Man, Mark Ennett, our drummer, being a drummer, he's in 17 bands. So one of
He
them
was in
was.
nine when the interview started. Now he's in 17. That pretty much
See,
sums up
drummers, they keep
drummers.
joining. Yeah, exactly. He may be in 20 by now. So in fact, probably is. But one of the bands, he plays in a rockabilly trio. They were just recording in his basement. He suggested a few times, why don't I bring in my equipment and just record a rehearsal just for reference? And we're like, yeah, okay, yeah, why not? We were astonished. And all we did was just say, oh, okay, this one. All right, that one. All right, these. And just rehearsed like we normally would. Once he went home and just did rough mixes, and I was saying, holy shit, you can hear everything for the first time, for one thing. You can't hear shit when you're rehearsing or on stage. The only time you can really hear everyone is a good recording, and we got that. We were just astonished at the quality of it. And then Kurt said, I work with a guy, Hans Molnar, out in Colorado. I'm just gonna email him these tracks and ask him to do a pro level mix. He's my friend. We got a friend price. Thank you so much, Kurt, and thank you so much, Hans Molnar, because they came back sounding just—I mean, no offense to Richard Marr and his wonderful Galaxy Park studio—can't quite compare to that. But it is these songs that you'll hear on—it's a free download available on our Bandcamp, Shaggy Lounge Volume 1. They sound better than just 90% of the punk records that I've paid decent money for and love. So, I hope you will be as thrilled as we were because we were just astonished at the quality. You're Killing Me was one of the originals that we happened to record during that rehearsal. That's a The Fightin' Fish song. That is actually on a 7-inch from The Fightin' Fish. But The Hammered Saint version blows it away. That's another song that in the early phase of the real Hammered Saint, this Hammered Saint, you know, the Hammered Saint that's making shit happen. Kurt, Emily, Mark, me, we, you know, when we said, okay, originals, like, shit, we better have some originals. So I said, how about this one?
So this was
And
recorded during the Shaggy Lounge Sessions Volume 1.
exactly,
Is there actually a
exactly.
Volume 2, or are we just talking about Volume 1 until
It's
the
in the works.
there will be.
You guys are gaining a big a lot of attention from your live show. That's what everyone talks about, Emily. And do you flip a switch? Is there a,
Ah!
cause right now I'm looking at you and on Zoom here, and you just you look cool. You got the cool, you're dressed out amazing. But what cramped shirt? I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, people listening, you'll have to go on YouTube just to check out Emily's out because she looks great. But I've watched a lot of videos of you, and you can just flip. I mean, how do you flip that switch? What happens?
I mean, yes, it is like flipping a switch, but it's more of like a dimmer.
Yeah.
Because, as Andy has now seen when I rode with him to New York City, and I kind of like got ready there at the show and like see the whole process of like when I get up on a show day, it's just I'm in a different mental place just to begin with. And then yeah, just the whole and I'm always late because I have to do like it's not even like there is a like set ritual I have. It's just, well, I have to pick out an outfit and I mean like I have to make sure that like every like single even jewelry accessory matches and like the shoes and the socks and like what am I gonna wear? Like it has to be special, like everything like has to be special for each show. It's not like I have a
That's
go-to
awesome.
thing. So, and I kind of have to like I think about the show and like what I want it to feel like. So I plan this like this whole like outfit and this like whole makeup thing. And then, I'm late because I've been like, obsessing over this. So by that time I have like this like I'm late energy. And then that's part of it. That's probably what it is. And then, yeah, like usually like we get like I just get there and it's just like, okay, we're ready to go. And then yeah, and then so yeah, usually like by the time I walk in the door, I'm like halfway there. And then just, it's like, all right, we're up next. And it's just like hyper focused, like nothing else on the planet exists except the that room at that time. And it's like, how do I like give this my absolute like 100% like just everything just give put everything out there 'cause,
You're
and
in a zone. You
right
get into
on.
a zone.
Yeah.
I've seen that in a lot of the videos. There's so
It
many of
comes
them.
across. I mean, oh Jesus. Yeah, if your eyeballs are scorched seeing the videos, come to a show. She'll flatten your ass right out.
Well, I was thinking I had this, I don't know, I won't say it was a nightmare, but it was more like a dream that I was at one of the shows and then she came out in the audience and started fucking with me and took my hat away from me and like did all this crazy
Yeah.
shit. It's really weird. I did have that dream and I was like,
That
I don't
happens
know,
in real life. That would happen. Yeah.
because I've seen you mess with people, which is cool.
A little.
So what's the plan now for the band? I mean, you said there's gonna be a Shaggy Lounge Sessions Volume 2. Are you guys looking at doing a full length at some point?
Well, we have a man, a system that just got rolling. Since we realized that we have an expedient and cost-effective way of recording and releasing superb-sounding material, there is a backlog that we're frankly working through. We are now, one rehearsal a month gets recorded at Mark and at Shaggy Lounge, and the best results are getting professionally mixed, and the schedule is the plan is to release one original on the first of every month, and we have
Good
enough
plan.
material for a full length. We that will come out as single tracks. Every time we are blasting through some of our favorite hoary old covers, and those will be on the Shaggy Lounge things. Those won't be the priority. We're not a cover band anymore. That's the part of the origins of Hammered Saint, but this is Hammered Saint now. This lineup, these songs, and more are coming out every fucking day, and they just smoke. So that's the plan. Keep releasing material. We're on a break from performing for a few months. That's coming to an end, thank Christ. Next month, we're back on stage at Coto Lowell, their new location. And
Oh,
then
is that
just a
open?
slew of shows. We're booked out to the summer now. Coto Lowell, we were supposed to play there, what, today or last week? Both, in fact.
Today, yeah.
We're supposed to play there, or yesterday, or and the week before. Both those got canceled because they couldn't get open in time. So we were ready before they were.
Well, it's interesting because I just had Chris Porter on the show. It's coming on a Monday. Chris Porter puts on the Town and the City Festival in Lowell. And
Okay.
he's up in Seattle now, but he used to book Bun. Well, I don't know if you ever remember Bun Ratty's. That's going way back
Oh,
in
yeah.
Boston history. It was a big club in Austin, but he's a longtime promoter. He mentioned Coto to me, and I was like, I didn't know they were moving up there. That's great. What a great idea.
But they're not moving the just another location.
Well, I mean, opening a new location.
Yeah.
It's great to have a second. Well, they can't. I love the one in Salem.
Oh,
I
it's
mean, that
amazing.
place is great. I've eaten there more than I've seen bands there, but it's definitely a cool location. So that's going to be, when is the show in Lowell?
Lowell, let me look at the calendar here. I believe it's the
22nd.
22nd. Thank you, Emily.
22nd.
Of February?
March 22nd.
March 22nd. Do you know the lineup for that yet?
Yes, it's the Fake Boys, Deacon Bill, and Walkers, who are all like Lowell area bands. We wanted to, get a bill with some bands that everybody there knew, get them to come out, see Hammered Saint. So that's that lineup, and we're so like fake. I've seen Fake Boys recently. They're incredible. They're all incredible bands, and I'm so excited to watch them.
That's great. It's good to hear that Lowell is actually developing a scene. I'm very excited about that. The art scene up there is growing too, which is really good.
We need to protect it now.
Right on.
I like your attitude towards that, because we need that. We need the art. What they've done already in Boston is horrible. It's supposed to be like the liberal city with all the good. It's supposed to be here for the arts and the music. And I don't know what happened, because that something's gone
Capitalism.
wrong.
It's Reagan's fault.
We can go that far back. That's when it all started.
It
I agree with that 100%. Well, hey, thanks a lot, you guys, for coming on. Unless there's something else that you want to tell my listeners about. I mean, we
Emily,
got.
could you talk a little about the CRS Tenants Committee and how you've been involved with that since Steve
Oh,
has brought it
sure.
up a couple times?
Actually, so funny story, not funny, funny. Andy asked me to come, sing for Hammered Saint. This was it summer 2020? And
Summer last year.
well, you're almost 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'd never been in that building. I'd heard about it. I'd been in the Sound Museum prior to that, and like we knew that was closing. And I remember coming in there and thinking, geez, I hope this isn't next. And then, I'd been in there like rehearsing with them for less than 6 months, and we get this notice that, I think it was January of last year, that, oh, you have to, all right, we're closing rehearsal spaces, everybody's got to go. And this was, I think it was January last year or February last year that the Sound Museum was closing like its doors for sure that month. And I'm thinking, you got to be fucking kidding me, like two in 1 month. And
Yeah.
just people were so outraged. And this is an example of like the power that we have,
Right
if
on.
the community comes together, what we can do. And we came out and we rallied. We reached out to Amy Bennett, and she came and helped us form a tenant association and get in touch, like put us in contact with the city. And Jesse Vengrove from Glacier, he I'd say he's largely responsible for him, saving the building, the amount of effort that he put in, and just so tenacious, just reaching out to people in the city and the building owners. And the building owners were, gracious enough to say, all right, like the building wasn't permitted for music rehearsal, but they're like, all right, we'll go this route, well, to save like these rehearsal spaces. And they've been wonderful working with us and keeping us up to date about what's going on. And hopefully that building is almost like we're this close to being, legal, fully permitted to be there.
Good news.
So I, we formed this tenant association and been working with them in the building to try to like keep music there and like work together. And yeah, so this is just a testament of like when people like come together, I think it's very easy to feel like so small and helpless. But for anybody who's listening, like we do have power collectively, we come together and just don't stop. Like we'll persevere. Like, and that's why Amy called it Arts Days here. I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. Like I'm not,
Right
I'm
on.
here. We're gonna do this. And so also, the city of Boston was great to like let us stay in this building, even though it wasn't permitted. So that was really wonderful on, all parts. And funny story, Gangrene is the reason that that rehearsal space exists. Those guys needed a place to rehearse. It was a storage building, and they got together and, some of their friends, and it started out as just, I don't know, five or
Rehearsing in a storage room. Yeah.
ten, just 5 or 10, rooms, the storage room. And it's funny because we're on the third floor, but I think we're in room number four. And I'm like, why are we in room number four on the third floor? And as it turns out, like that little corner there was like the original space where, Gangrene and friends, set up shop. So I say, I'm like, I like to think that this was their room.
Yeah, there we go.
Nice.
They were in this room. They've been in this room. They partied with their friends.
There's still plenty of empty Budweiser cans around, so it's
Yeah. So that's really cool. And but yeah. And so, but if anybody, like, if you're interested, go to like look up Arts Days Here. I believe artsdayshere.org. There's so many different ways you can get involved. They have a podcast, and
Yeah, they do. They record down at New Alliance. Yeah.
yep. I've
Yeah.
done one. I'm gonna do another one in a couple weeks.
So
But
a bunch of amazing people and organizations. But the way I put it, of course, is that Emily saved our rehearsal space, the scene, and thus the city.
that problem in Boston spread to Cambridge because I remember I was living in Pittsburgh and I heard about the EMF building closing and I was like, you got to be kidding me. That was such a great studio. New Alliance had a good, there were several studios in that building, but I knew so many bands that rehearsed there. Then the place on Brighton Ave, Sound Museum, that's where
Sound
the
Museum.
Charms rehearsed. So I used to go there a lot because I managed those guys. And, it sucks, man, but I'm glad that you guys are doing it. It's funny, Amy and I go way back because when I worked at A&M Records, she worked at PolyGram, and PolyGram was our distributor. So we've known each other, and whenever we see each other, big hug and everything. I love that Amy's doing this, and I love that you're working with Amy, Emily. That's fantastic.
Yeah, she's incredible, and I on like every day I feel so just honored and like humbled, like to be working with her and like Jesse and all these other people. I'm like, you guys are so amazing, and you're like letting me be a part of like what you're doing. So it's something that's become like really important in my life, and I love it. And like the band is still always number one, but it's
Thank
like
you. Better it be.
very very close number two, like very fulfilling. And yeah.
Music and art, my
Yeah.
two
Right
favorite
on.
things.
Right
My
on.
two favorite things. Hey, thank you guys very much, Emily and Andy, for coming on.
Thank you for
Hammered,
asking us.
people love Hammered Saint, and I think you guys are going to do great. I have, I can't wait to come and see you. I told Andy
That'd be
before you
great.
came on, Emily, that I went to a Hammered Saint show, and you guys had to cancel. It was at the Middle East, with Freeloader. So I tried, and
We'll
I will try again.
try harder, Steve. Jesus, it's been a year.
We haven't had to cancel a show for sickness in a while, so knock on
Yeah.
wood. I've never, I don't think I'd ever, prior to that show, I don't think ever I'd had to cancel, like, I'd had to be in a show that was canceled because somebody was sick. So,
Yeah.
but Andy and I were both gravely ill, so.
And then and then someone from the headliner, the drummer in Tiger Bomb, tested
They
positive as
canceled.
well.
That's right,
Yep.
Tiger Bomb. They also canceled. That was a weird night. I get
Oh.
there and there's one band, and then John Pajita shows up. John Pajita shows up to save the day. You know,
There you go. There you go.
it was fun, but I really wanted to see you guys. But I'll catch you
Yeah.
guys soon,
Good,
definitely.
good, good.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
for having us. It's a wonderful thrill.
Yeah,
All
thank
right.
you. This has been great.
Cool. Thanks. So quickly every week, doesn't it? All right, that track's called Dirty Work, Hammered Saint. Punk rock is alive and well. Thank you, Emily and Andy. That was a lot of fun. You could tell punk rock has grown up. Can't imagine a lot of bands agreeing to do interviews at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. They're like, fucking Steve Ricardo, 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Hey, we did it. They didn't seem to be complaining. And if you watch the video, they look pretty good. Emily looks great in the video. I suggest you watch it. Pretty cool. All right. I do enjoy hearing from you all, so please write me at twistedrico@gmail.com. If you're a musician or a songwriter and you have music, please send it. You might hear it here or on the or perhaps on the Mirror Stars podcast. We also have Instagram, Facebook threads, and a great YouTube page where you can actually watch the Zoom interview I did with Emily and Andy. There's also a TikTok page where we post a lot of clips. All right. Oh, please, please, please. This is something I want to mention to you. You know, what's really important about this podcast to me. You know, the best way to tell, if you like this podcast, the best thing you can do to help me is tell one person. Because if everyone tells one person to check out this podcast, it's going to grow organically. And that's how it's been growing all along. So please consider doing that. And consider this. We have a Patreon page, patreon.com/twistedrico, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support this podcast. All right, that's going to do it for this time. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. What are we going to do? We're going to keep the rock and roll alive.